Well, hey guys, welcome to the Boning Soul Podcast. Thanks for joining me again. It's been a few weeks. I hope you you enjoyed the last couple episodes there. You know, they weren't pure, you know, bow and arrows and hunting. You know, Nick Otto from Huntivore, you know, obviously he's a hunter, but, you know, we dove pretty deep into some not so common food and food preparations. I really like geeking out about that stuff. And then the last episode with Josh Gall from Stuff and Whiskey, you know, not a hunter. But, you know, just fun guy. And I hope you guys are following him if you're interested in, you know, any of like the bourbon and whiskey kind of thing. I'm a relative noob at that. I'll raise my hand completely and say, you know, whether you want to call it bandwagon or not, but, I'm kind of having fun with, you know, geeking out with all that. So it was really good to have him on. And I hope you guys got something out of that. So I'll probably, you know, do more of that kind of stuff. You know, other things that interest me, or talking to people that aren't, you know, necessarily just pure, you know, bow hunting or traditional bow hunting. You know, there's a whole big world out there, right? And lots of interesting people to talk to. So I don't know. Hope you guys got some entertainment and some value out of that. So anywho, nothing crazy as far as anything going. We are turkey season opened up the other day. It's kind of funny because when I didn't go out on opener, which was last Wednesday for us. I believe it was like the 15th or something, like, no, not the 15th, 13th. I can't remember, whatever it was last week. I went out a few days later, and it was like 80 something degrees. It was like 85 degrees. Wind was just blowing, dry, dusty. You know, didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. I was only able to get out like midday. You know, there's first of all, on turkey opener here, I'm not going anywhere. There last year when I was able to actually get out on turkey opener on the actual morning of, I mean, there was like 5-6 cars in the parking lot, 3 or 4 dudes per car. You know, and I said no, I just went away somewhere else, didn't see anything, didn't really see much all season. But I'm kind of skipping like the openers and all that kind of stuff, but I did end up going. God, I can't remember. Was that on a Friday? It was probably on a Friday. Anyway, we were like 80 something degrees here in Minnesota. Well, today it snowed. It was like 30 degrees or something like that, and it snowed like 4 inches. It's crazy, and like howling like 45 mile an hour winds. It'll be gone in a day or so, but it just goes to show you. even if I could have gotten out this weekend, there's no way I was going to do that. But it's a long season for us. It goes like a month and a half, goes to the end of May, which is you know, it's a long season. So hopefully I'll be able to get out a bunch. Just been doing some more shooting, doing some more tuning on my bows, some arrow setups, that kind of stuff, because I just can't stop tinkering. And yeah, that's really it. Putting out some YouTube videos, obviously. If you're not watching that, go watch that on the Bowhunting Soul YouTube channel. Really appreciate the follows and the likes and the comments and the engagement. First of all, I appreciate those anyway. And, of course, the algorithm really appreciates it because it shows that people are actually watching, and it just kind of puts more eyeballs on there. So, if you're interested in anything I say on this podcast, you know, first of all, a like and a rating and all that would be just fantastic, right? Apple Podcasts or Spotify, right? They're like the two biggies. I don't know how to do it. I haven't done it in a while. Just go figure it out. You guys are smart. You know how to work a smartphone. So if you could kind of go in there and find a way to leave a rating, I'd greatly, greatly appreciate it. Same on the YouTube side. That's easy. Just go give a like, give a follow, give a share, and give a comment. And that's, you know, that's about as much as I can ask for. So I'm going to try to be putting out more content, obviously, as, you know, we're into spring and I'm getting outside more. So kind of, what did I do last time? I did a bow review on this. I was gifted this Browning Explorer 1 recurve. It's beautiful shape. Go check out that video. It's, I'm pretty lucky to have it. A friend found it in her basement. And gifted it to me, so I'm super, super happy about that. Did a follow-up video on my St. Patrick Lake longbow. I've got a bunch of stuff out there. Anyway, go check it out. Hope and maybe you know, maybe you find it entertaining. But anyway, this episode is, of course, partially brought to you by The Push, right? The Push Archery Center of Knowledge. That I'm telling you, yeah, the Joel Turner course is great. The Tom Klum course is fantastic, but I'm really geeking out over the God, I always forget the name of the damn course. The tuning for the bow hunter, basically, right? With Cody Greenwood from Trad Lab. It is an awesome. I mean, if you're into like nerding out about stuff and tweaking and you know, trying to understand what a node is, okay? If you've heard any of this stuff, you'll know what I'm talking about. Go watch this stuff. Go sign up for the course. It's helped tremendously. I'm learning a lot of stuff. I knew a lot of the stuff, but you're always learning a lot of stuff, and I think you can too. So if you're into that kind of stuff, just definitely go check out those courses. Well worth it. So I have a link to Hiko Ito knives right in the description below. I'll link that, and if I don't, probably have it on the YouTube channel as well on his knives. Obviously, he is a knife maker out of Hawaii. And he has a discount code for his EDC Skinner Lite, which I do review on the YouTube channel. Super cool knife. Again, really looking forward to putting that thing through the paces in hunting season, right? Whether it's turkey season or when we get into next fall, right? I haven't really been able to do a whole lot much more with it, but as far as, you know, build quality and sharpness and all that stuff, I'm playing with it right now, actually, as we speak. And it's up there. So go check out his stuff. Go check out the discount code. I believe it's 10% off. I may be wrong about that, but I'll put that in the description below. So if you're looking at checking out some cool knives, do that. Now, speaking about cool knives, I have another fantastic knife maker on today. He has been on the podcast before. It's been like a year and a half. Since he was on before, and it's Travis Stiles, right, from Broken Compass Knives. He's out of Michigan. He basically like started building knives. I mean, literally like one of those like started in my garage kind of things. And he's just kind of improved his lineup, his craftsmanship, his just everything. He's gotten very, very popular, especially in the trad community. And, he's at the point where, it's a good thing for him, bad thing for those of us that want his knives, that, he's basically stopped taking orders. He's going to be doing, we talked about this a little bit in the episode, but he's going to be taking orders, or at least releasing knives in batches, do like knife drops, like 5 at a time, 8 at a time, something like that, whatever he decides to do. And, you're just going to have to be kind of, either on a list or quick to snatch them up. So his knives are, if you go look at Jason Simkoviak's channel, right, he's reviewed his knives multiple times, a big fan of them. Lots of people are also raving about his knives and stuff, very very well built. And I also tell him, in this episode too, like from when he was last on to like now, right, however that long is, a year and a half, something like that, just his level of craftsmanship and the things that he offers and the fit and I don't know about fit and finish, obviously, because I haven't handled it, but I mean just the different models that he's offering and the handle styles and the workmanship and stuff that he's doing is just like improved like by leaps and bounds, right? I mean, he's just really, really mastering this craft, and it's a very, very cool skill. And definitely worth checking out. So if you want to go look at his stuff, Broken Compass Knives on Instagram. I believe he said Facebook too, but not sure. But you have to listen to the episode for that one. But anyway, so definitely go check out his stuff. So we get into talking about obviously his knife making, but that's not till like later in the episode. We just kind of catch up and BS a little bit, talk about hunting and how his last season went. Some highs and lows and upcoming things and that kind of stuff. So it was really, really cool to catch up with him. Very cool guy to talk to. I'm glad we got to sit down and talk again. So it won't be the last time he's on. So anywho, all right, rambled on long enough. Sorry about that. So here's my interview with Travis Stiles of Broken Compass Knives.
Scratching, like something scratching at a door. It's my dog. I'm sitting right on my deck outside right now. Yep. If someone's outside, he has to be outside. I got a puppy. That's a whole nother story for another time, but that's
is this a new dog or
it is a new dog. Ironically, we were looking for a new dog last year, and I wouldn't say a new dog, but we're looking for a playmate for my older dog.
Yeah.
And because she just sits on the couch all day. She's a couch potato, which is fine. but she was starting to get fat, and I was like, well, she needs a playmate. We started looking, and of course, you know, right around September time frame, and we went and looked at a couple pups to rescue and whatever. And ironically, she found one when I was on the LVL hunt last year down in Kentucky. And she was so worried about this dog being adopted before I got home. And that's all the conversation was for like 2 days, like on this hunt. And I was like, just go get the dog. Just go get the dog. I mean, and I was like, what is it even a mix of? What are they saying? And they're like, lab pit. And I was like, okay, fine. I'm fine with pits. I love pits. But this, oh, he has been nothing but money since we got him. Oh, he eats everything. It's like, especially, oh, dude, he's a digger. So he dug these big, massive holes in my yard. When we got him, he was smaller than my dog, right? And they tried passing him off as a three-month-old pup, and I see him for the first time, and I was like, there's no way that dog's 3 months old. No way. And I was right. The vet put him at about 6 months, so they were about 3 months off, or at least trying. And right now, this dog is not even a year old, already sitting at about 90 pounds.
Oh, my God.
He's a big old knucklehead.
What's your other dog?
It's another pit mix. Well, it's honestly, it's more pure pit than the one we got. Cause I don't think he's mixed with a pit. I think like he has a blockier head, which you see kind of a pit, but definitely has lab in him because the web feed, the coat, but I don't want to say it, but maybe like a cane Corso, maybe. He still has giant feet and he's lanky. He still hasn't filled in. He is 8 lawn ornaments. Like we got one of those Intellect pools in the yard. So all those little rubber hosings coming out, he ate through those. He ate my archery deer target in my backyard, which my wife told me, oh, he knocked it over, so you didn't need to go pick it up. I'm like, all right, I haven't shot in about a week. In the middle of the winter, mind you. I go out there. A lot of the snow has started to melt. And I see my deer. It wasn't knocked over. He tore it apart. It was only a year old. Like, the target was only a year old. And he ate the center out of the target. And it's one of those inserts. He ate so much around it. I can't even put an insert in it. So... I love dogs.
It's just all loose.
I had to replace it. There was no. I could use bits and pieces of it. Like I'm looking at the hind end of it right now. I'm gonna cut it all up so it kind of looks like a turkey target and paint it black. So that's it. It's like God. That's if you want some,
oh my goodness.
I wish I can just. I can rattle off a list of the things he ate that I didn't think a dog could eat. And you would just be amazed. But this isn't that type of podcast, so.
No, I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated. Does this dog get along, the new one get along with your old dog? Or?
Oh, yeah. And he's got all this puppy energy. And he just keeps, like, he just goes and goes and goes and goes and. My dog, she had two knee replacements, and so she's part titanium now. And
I didn't know they could do that for dogs.
Oh gosh, yes, she has more titanium in her than I care to admit. But apparently, it's a thing with pit bull breeds. It's their knees go out or their ligaments or whatever. And they just put in titanium placements, do a little bit of surgery. But I mean, every time we do it, it's like $2,500 a pop. So, you know,
I was going to say, that's got to be nice and cheap. Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, so if it's not my house costing me money, it's my dogs. And I love my dogs to death. I do, man. It's like, you know, they're like, oh, they're like your kids. It's like, well, they are. They are like my kids. But, you know, if I put my son in a cage and tell him I'll be back in 5 hours, you know, see you later. I go to jail. You know, I put a dog in there, everybody's fine. So they're not like kids. So.
Yeah.
But,
oh my goodness.
But anyway, I know, like, and that cut my LBL hunt just a little bit short too, because she was just stressed out because of the new puppy. And then, on top of that, her mom was in the hospital for like 4 days. So she's just so stressed out. It's like, I'll come home. Forget it. It'll work out. And she didn't know what day I was going to come home exactly. As I told her, yeah. I tried to cut the hunt a little bit shorter. And the more I talked to her, you can just hear it in your wife's voice, like just stressed out and just feels worn out all the time, you know? And so I was like, all right, let me come home. And my wife already suffers from enough like health issues as it is. And so I was like, hey, is it good for her or for my son or the new dog? So let me go home and take care of business. So it was kind of like a big storm, you know, of a whole bunch of stuff. Like I found out he likes to eat mushrooms. You know, I didn't know I had mushrooms in my yard. Like, I was like, how? I never even see these before. All of a sudden, they sprout up just as he comes into our household. And I had to spend like another $800 on an emergency vet visit because this dog decided to go on a magic trip, you know, on a spaceship somewhere. And
so we've got mushrooms in our backyard too. And I don't, I mean, they're just from an old stump that, they're from an old stump that like we cut down, but we still never like, you know, it's just kind of soggy old what do you call it, stump residue. I don't know what the hell you'd call it, right? Stuff you can grind down all the way, but like it just kind of grows there like every year no matter what we do. And it's like, yeah, we don't luckily we don't have, you know, we don't have dogs. My daughter's never like played in it or around it or whatever, you know, but I don't know what that is. I know those ones you can't eat, you know, so. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's one of those things that just can't. It's another reason I really don't like the summer. I like when everything is like covered in snow, because I don't have to do lawn care. I don't have to worry about ants. I don't have to worry about bugs. I don't have to worry about weeds. I mean, it's just my lawn every year. I've been in this house for, it's going to go on 8 years now, and I've never really caught up with getting a handle on the lawn. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's hilarious, but well, it's not hilarious. It's kind of sad. Anywho, so.
Anywho, no, I get it.
Anywho, so I guess we should introduce you. We're 10 minutes in. Travis Stiles.
Sorry. What's up, buddy?
How's it going? It's been like on my Skype here, it says like over a year ago is when we chatted. So
I know, I noticed that. I was like, dang, has it been that long? Wow.
It's been that long. Like I haven't talked to you. I've listened to you on some other stuff, but we really haven't kind of caught up. So I don't know. I guess for anyone who doesn't know who you are, maybe just kind of give them like a quick kind of roundup of like, you know, where you are, what you do.
All right. My name is Travis Stiles. I'm the owner, operator, sole proprietor of Broken Compass Knives. It doesn't feel like that as of lately as much because my time's been so minimal, but I'm trying to get stuff out there. And just a traditional bow hunting nut, I guess. I mean, just ate up with it. So I really, that's how I got introduced to you for the most part. So yeah,
it's true.
I'm nothing special.
Yeah, no kidding, me neither. So it's a good thing we're talking to each other. Maybe we can do something. I guess, you know, I think we dove a little bit back into your history back the first time you were on. You know what I mean? But I mean, it's been like so long ago. I mean, how long you been hunting? How long you been doing this?
I've been hunting since
at least in the traditional sense, you know.
Traditional more specifically. I started dabbling in it about 2016, 2017. I started taking the bow into the woods a lot more often. Now, hold on a second.
Sorry
about that. My son just walked outside. But he gets bad at his video games, and all of a sudden he's just like, ah, let's go outside and yell. So, but don't we all? At any rate, as far as traditional bow hunting goes, I mean, geez, yeah, 2017, I really started to get into it. And in 2018, I gave away my compound, and actually even, I'll even go for it, just about, right around 2018, I gave away my compound, gave it to my little brother to get him back into shooting. Of course, he just left it sit in his garage and doesn't really touch it much anymore. And the sad thing is, he's a hell of a shot. Like, it's just one of those things where it just makes you sick. The guy doesn't touch something for like a year or two or three and just picks it up, and he's just dead ringing everything from any yardage. And it's like, I hate your guts, and I gotta work so hard at it. But
those naturally talented people really pissed me off. I know.
Oh God. And it's like, growing up, me and him always did baseball and football and stuff like that. We were always like always together and doing this stuff. And he he just got out of shooting, and I got him into bass fishing at a younger age, and now that's his passion. And I was like, man, too bad, because like with your shot quality, you could be a hell of a bow hunter. And he's like, oh, fine. It's the fall bass season is pretty good too. I was like, all right, whatever. So at any rate, sorry, side tangents I'm known for.
No.
But I started off with a L card I got from Greg Coffey, and kind of just bow-hoed my way into what I'm in right now. So just go back and forth.
Yeah.
A lot of different. I say what?
Oh, I said you bow-hoed your way in. Yeah, no, I know the feeling.
Yeah, it's especially between Schaefer and my buddy Tony. Like, it's always a thing. Like, all right, what are we doing this year? It's like we all say the same thing. I don't think I'm gonna buy a bow this year. I think I'm good. Next thing you know, especially Schaefer, she was like, I just put in an order with Centaur or Black Widow or Tall Tines or whatever.
or all of them.
Exactly. Great Northern. Yeah. Or our buddy Lee when he was still making bows. And but yeah, it's crazy, you know.
Schaefer's excuse was that he was trying to get all these bows bought before he became a dad, right? Because he knew he was gonna run out of money. But now he's a dad and he's still buying all these bows. So you know, I don't know.
Well, I talked to him about it, and in his defense is, well, with the baby around, him and his wife really don't go out and do a lot of things now. So if he's just at home with the kid all day and not out about spending money, he has more money for bows and archery stuff. And I was like, well, that's actually a pretty valid point. You got a point there. I mean, I can't really argue with it, because that's kind of what I do too. I was like, I don't go out and about it. I don't go to the bar or nothing like that. I buy tags and archery equipment, and sometimes a bow slips in there once in a while. And I just got a Satori riser on trade. So I'm doing a custom build for a hunt knife. And honestly, I got DOS limbs for it now, but I always kind of wanted to dabble with ILF just to kind of see what it's about. And luckily, Three Rivers has, you know, a good selection at a fair price, and especially with their own brand. So I was quite happy to do that, and called my buddy Dean, who works down there. And he said, you know, bang for the buck is to get this. And that's what I did. So,
yeah. So I had that hankering to go ILF as well, just to kind of mess with it, you know, just something else to mess with. And I went the complete opposite direction and bought an ASL.
Which is
about as totally divergent as you could get, you know, between the two. And I just put down an order for another one too. So, but that's
a year out. That's how you know you like
my. Yeah. So that's my justification. It's like, oh, it's a year out. I can save up, you know, for it or whatever. So it's not going to be, but then, like you said, like everything kind of comes up, house and bills and this and that, unexpected stuff. You're like, oh, well, the money I was going to put away, I told myself I was going to put away for that. Now it's getting used up for this. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But,
right?
So what are you shooting nowadays then?
Well, as of right now, I'm shooting Great Lakes Bulwarks Talon. It's a 60-inch longbow, R&D style, and it's right at 51 pounds at 28 inches, which isn't too bad. It's right in my sweet spot. It spits an arrow. It's such a good shooter, and I found out, what is it, earlier this year, Lee decided he's not going to be building bows again anymore. And he said, I talked to him a little bit. He said he's going to build some for himself here and there, but he, as of right now, is just not a good tie for him. And I understood. And I kind of got disappointed because, you know, it's kind of like between like me and Bob Smith and Dave Darling, you know, Bob Smith at Big Stick Archery, then, you know, Dave Darling at Kalamazoo Bowworks. You know, I love their bows, and you know, same thing with Coffee's bows, and like it's always something different, a little bit different. Each one offers something just a little bit different when it comes down to it, and I love supporting like small guys trying to, you know, try to make a little bit of a name for themselves, you know, to get steady, maybe do this full time, part time, whatever they want. And for the most part, it's like, you know, he lived really close, and you know, he did a phenomenal job. He made it out of the handle out of black G10, which is what I wanted, and he did like a cross grain black and gray, like action wood type thing, like you see, like a gray bark on a black widow.
Yeah,
and he did it for a fair price, and you know what, I am extremely happy with his bows. I have like two bows from Dave that I absolutely love, like his Manitou and his Arcadia. His Arcadia was my first custom, and that I got his Manitou, which was his prototype from last year. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely mild R&D or reflex. Anyway, when it's strung up, it looks like a D-shaped ASL. But that thing spits an arrow so damn fast, it's stupid.
It's no kidding.
Like if you get it right at like right at 10 grains per inch for your arrow weight, or even up into the 12s, like I was shooting aluminums, full length 2018s with 200 grains up front, and that thing was just sending them. Like it's a very smooth bow, no hand shock, or at least for me. I can't speak for everybody because everybody's always a little like different with certain things, but I put a quiver on that thing and just let it rock, and it just sends them like, no. The same thing with the big sticks, of course.
So I've never shot either one of Bob's bows or Dave's bows, but everyone seems to love them. I haven't got my hands on them. You know what I mean? Maybe this year. Are you going to go to ETAR? Are you going to be at ETAR this year?
I am going to go to ETAR this year. I'm going to just show off the shoot. I'm not going to do a booth or anything because this year I barely have enough time to do the orders that I have. But that's another topic for that. But what is it? I think I'm going to take. Let's see. I was told it's about 8.5 hours from where I'm at right now, give or take. So
I think I'm like 16 or 17.
Which in Schaefer terms, that's a day trip. So I'm just saying.
See, just I'm used to my previous life, right? I traveled a lot, whether it's driving or flying or whatever, but I mean I'm used to like hopping in a dually and towing a trailer and just like cranking out 15 hours a day, right? So
right.
That to me is not that big a deal. Like people are like, oh man, it's 6 hours away. I'm like, that's like the first fuel. Okay, no, it's not, because I stop a lot, right? But still, that's right. Like the first whatever, you know. So 16 hours isn't that bad. It's more gas, because you know, when I was previous job, obviously driving around, it wasn't on my coin, right? So now, you know, I'm like, man, right. You know, but either way. So I've never been to any of these like rendezvous or shoots or any of that stuff, right? So right. I'm really I've got it booked. I've got a plan. My wife's like kicking me out of the house. Like, go, I want you to go. 'Cause you never do these. I'm like, all right.
Excellent.
So right now, yeah, I plan on going. I called up Schaefer. I'm like, dude, talk to me about ETAR. And he's like, what do you want to know? I said, like, how does it work? What do you do? He's like, well, you just kind of show up, and here's when people show up, and here's and blah, blah, blah. And on this day and on this day, I'm like, okay, do you need to like get like camping spots? You gotta prepay. And he's like, no, you know, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, all right, cool. All right. So it's like on my schedule. I am, as far as I'm concerned, I am going, unless something like crazy happens, I am not going. But yeah, and I can finally get to like meet all like my, you know, my internet friends.
Yeah, there you go.
and shoot their bows.
Right. Shoot your bows. Hell yeah.
That's right. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. Cool. You know, so, because you know, especially you guys, like you live a lot closer, and like in the Michigan area and the kind of the Northeast, mm-hmm. or whatever, upper Northeast Midwest, I guess, what do you want to call it?
Right.
You guys are a lot closer with each other to some of these, like Kalamazoo and what is it, mm-hmm. Compton's up there, isn't it? And
yep.
Yeah. So none of these things I've been to. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's on the books.
Oh, definitely. Next time you see a Compton banquet going on, the Big Game Classic, go to it. And mm-hmm. same thing with the PBS Odd Year Gathering, go to that.
Yep.
Like I was at the banquet this year and I had a blast. And they had it in Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids is only about 45 minutes away from me. And of course, I had to drive through a whiteout snowstorm to get there, but totally worth it, completely. And of course. I during the banquet itself and during the auction, I haven't laughed so hard in so long. It was stupid. It's just everybody just cutting it up with you at the table. You sit with some people, you know, you've never even met before. I met a guy from Iron Mountain, which was way up in the UP. And, you know, we just started catching up and we talk here and there, hopefully get to meet up with them again here before too long. But yeah, for the most part, it was like whenever you go to these gatherings, you're guaranteed to at least meet between at the very least one, maybe between one to four people you never met before, but you always keep contact with you. Now, on the opposite end, I will say, I've met many of people and I try and, you know, hey, how you doing? Haven't talked to you in a while. How's your season and stuff? And, but great people. That's what I love about this stuff. It's like the people you meet, and you're always going to meet a couple bad eggs in here, you know, once in a while, but you know, that's just in life in general. So
sure.
But yeah, you know, I mean, and not only that, but you find out that somebody's internet 10 rings are pretty much like staged, you know. Oh, that was after the 10th try. I got that. And I try and be honest all the time. It's like, nope, it took me 10 tries to get to this point. It's like, sometimes it's like that. And when you go out shooting with me, I will boost your ego so much because I'll be shooting next to you. I'll make all right shot. And just for you to go, you know, put in the 10 ring every time or something like that. It's like whenever I shoot with Schaefer, it's always a joke of where are we going to find Trav's arrow now? You know what I mean? Oh, you plucked that one. Oh, there it goes off into the trees. So I learned I can't go target shooting with aluminum arrows anymore. So.
So. Yeah. You come back with a bunch of bent stuff. Yeah. That's important, dude. I mean, I've said it before, but I really try because I put out a lot of YouTube like stuff, right? I really try to be like, look, this is one, or if on Instagram or something, like this is 100% what I'm capable mm-hmm. of, but it's not what I normally do. You know what I mean? This is mm-hmm. an Insta group, and I'll go out of my way to make sure I say that because people think like your post stuff, like, oh, this is what you do all the time. I went live on the St. Patrick Lake Longbows Facebook group page, like. What was it? A few days ago, something like that.
Right.
And like, okay, if I concentrate, if I really, really know my shit and whatever, I can, you know, inside of a fist, and that's at like 15 yards, right? I mean, I'm not very good at that, to 20 or whatever. So I probably shot 15 or 20 arrows. Maybe 7 or 8 of them were what I consider good arrows and actually landed where I wanted them to land. I mean, I completely fell apart. Short draw, pluck, just stupid collapses, whatever. And yeah, I mean, every now and then you just got to like, I mean, I guess you don't have to bare your soul. You know what I mean? But if you're going to keep yourself honest, like this is pressure. People are watching, and I'll do the same thing too. If I'm at the indoor range over here, look, I can sit here in my house and I can shoot, you know, in my basement, like 13 yards. Right. And fine. Great. Looks awesome. If I have someone watching me at the local archery range here, just like just a few minutes away from me, actually, I don't do nearly as well, you know, and it really pisses me off because I feel like whether it's real or not, I mean, it's a compound shop, right? I mean, there's trad shooters there, but I feel like, I don't know if you feel like this, but I feel like I have to represent more than the average like compound person would, because I don't know whether it's, they really think this or not. But in my mind, they're like, oh, here's one of those trad people. And he probably like flings arrows all over the place and wounds animals and blah, 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 blah. Let's see how he shoots. You know what I mean? And then I perceive that whether they're actually thinking it or not, you know?
Right.
And then I'll shoot like shit and I'll be like, oh, I just fed into a stereotype, you know?
Right.
And I'll feel bad about it. I don't know.
Right. Well, I've been dealing with, I hate to say it, but a little bit of target panic lately, and I've just been wanting to dump the string like more and more, and today I'm trying to practice for turkey season, and so I just sat on my stool and I just made like 5 yards. That's all I'm doing. I'm sitting on the stool just practicing 5 yards, and I'm not doing what I usually do. Like I'll shoot an arrow, go pull it from the target, come back. You know what I mean? I'll just go back and forth like that. But I don't know why, but I'm just not fixing myself on the target as much as what I usually do. And it's really been messing with my head, because I'm, like I said before, it's like I have to really work hard to be accurate and put in the time, put in the work. And I, throughout the summer, that's what I do. And throughout the spring, summer, winter is a little bit harder. Like you know, being from the Midwest, it's, you know, I don't always want to go outside when it's, you know, 15 degrees and snow blowing and, you know, 30 mile an hour wind. You know, but I'll go in my shop, and, you know, when I have the heat going, when I'm working in there at the end of every night, even though I'm tired, I'll try and fling like 5 arrows, you know, and just try and keep up with it. But, and I started a league and, I started going to a league, and you know, it's a flat face target, but they put silhouettes of animals in general. So, you know, basically what they're counting is kill zones, and that's what it comes down to. And the last two times I went, I don't know why, I just could not focus enough on the targets, and it just got in my head. So usually when I do that, I come back to my house and I just plug this target at 5 yards. Like I don't leave 5 yards until I know I'm putting everything I got into something the size of a baseball, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I did, you know, only practicing for turkey season in general. So, so that's what I did.
Do you
today,
find, do you do that? Like one arrow a day kind of thing? Or like, you know, one arrow per, you know, shoot one and then walk away for like a half a day or a few hours or whatever. I find that actually that really helps me.
Mm-hmm. Well, generally not. I usually do a set, usually about 3 arrows, and I try to take it from different distances. And what I'm doing is I might start at 5, I might start at 10, I might go all the way back to 30. But what I'm doing is I'm just trying to put time between each shot and just trying to think about it. And I, you know, I'll take 3 arrows. I'll step out from my little garage or my workshop, and I'll just throw arrows generally. And if I feel like it's not far enough, or if my first two are bad, I might take it in just a little bit. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to build my confidence in general. And you know, it's like, because during the summer, it would be nothing for me to sling 100 arrows a day. Like, I'll go out there and I'll just sit there and I'll just pound this target until I am so sore. You know what I mean? My fingers are sore, my back is sore, my shoulder, whatever, because I've been plucking, whatever it might be, or pulling with my shoulder. You know, I'm just doing that. And the only thing I'm trying to do is, you know, just trying to get to know the arrow, like really trying to get the trajectory down. And I'm trying to really pay more attention to that and just get so comfortable with the bow. Because usually every year I switch bows. But I was comfortable with it for hunting season, but I wasn't so comfortable to feel confident out to 25, 30 yards, even though I generally never let anything like hunt anything like that. All of my shots have been, geez, I think the longest shot I took at a deer and actually hit it, I should say, was like all under 10 yards. Now, I'm not a big animal killer or anything like that, or, you know, big deer killer. I don't want you to think that, but what I'm getting at is I just wait for the right shot. I wait till the feeling is right. I feel comfortable, you know.
Did you shoot anything last year?
Unfortunately, I did. And what I mean by that is I shot one doe on my buddy's property and I lost it. That was a whole debacle, and that was my fault because I rushed the process.
Yeah.
And I bumped it right off the property, and none of the other landowners would let us track the deer on their property. So, I gave it about 3.5-4 hours, give or take. And and when she came in, I missed a chip shot of 5 yards from my tree stand. And keep my, I'm only about 10 feet up, and I shot right underneath her armpit. And she bounded out and came back right between 10 and 12, give or take that. And I put one right behind the rib cage, and it went right through her. And I just watched her for like about an hour before it got too dark. And I waited about another 30 minutes after dark to get down from my tree to make sure I didn't, you know, spook her out. And
did she just lay down or?
Yeah, she went and laid down on the edge of a farm field, right on the edge. And when I got down, you couldn't see me, like on the ground, period. You couldn't see where she laid down. I had to watch her in the binos the entire time. But we went back, and just, it was a gut shot deer. That's what it came down to. And she wasn't moving too good, I can tell you that. But it's just one of those things. It's like I felt so confident. I was like, man, the way she was acting and the blood she was losing, I was like, God, she's got to be dead. There's no way she's not. And I rushed. I know better, but I was so excited. And I shot her about 5:30. We came back about after dark. It was about 9:30. We got something to eat, chilled out for a little bit longer, and took up the trail. I should have just, in retrospect, I should have just went home, drove the hour home, woke up at like 3 a.m., come back out at 4, and I probably would have found her dead. Like, if I had to guess.
Well, you bumped her, though.
Oh, that's the only thing I could figure. We couldn't hear her going through the woods or anything like that, but I'm over there on my hands and knees, me and my buddy, for like 2 hours looking for specks of blood. Then all of a sudden she'd tear open and leave a good little trail for like 5 yards, and all of a sudden it just dry up. So hands and knees, turning over leaves.
God.
It went with flashlights, headlamps, you name it. So it was a rough season at the start, and that made it worse. Then I go to state land and before work, and I go sit in a spot that I see does, and that's why I went out there. I went out there more specifically for does because I can find those does easier than I can bucks. But there's this one path that they'll take in the middle of the day between 9:30 and 12. And throughout the rut, it is not uncommon to see 2 to 3 bucks travel through this. Now, I've only seen, you know, let's just say like a decent little eight, basket eight to, you know, spike going back and forth through this area. And once I get to the spot, technically, I can still see my truck in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And it's a big floodplain area. So big, tall trees with nothing, with no, like, limbs hanging low. So the only way you can really hide is if in the trees, if you go 20 plus feet up in the air. And the only time I do that is when I'm up close to other trees that are just too small to get into. And with it being right after I dropped off my son from school and right before I go to work, I was like, all right, well, I'll just hunt from the ground. So I get on the ground. I go down this walking path and just taking it nice and easy. I find the trail that they go on. I walk adjacent to it, so not to leave my scent directly on the trail. And I found this nice little area where, ironically, bucks have been bedding because you can see the trees on the shrubs around it and stuff. And I just kind of tuck in there, and I'm just kind of sitting on my knees, and I'm scanning, and I'm about 40 minutes into the hunt, and all of a sudden I get a doe pop out right to my right on my weak side, and she was at 10 yards. I just barely see her, and I see she turned around to look behind her. So I start facing her on my knees, and I'm just waiting for her to just, you know, posture like she's getting ready to move. So I go back to full draw, and I wait, and I put it on her, and I get a full pass through at about 8 yards, maybe, on the ground, and just crazy blood. And I gave it time. Like, I did everything I could. So I went back to the truck. I did not look for blood. Only thing I did is I found my arrow, and I see it is completely coated in blood. I'm like, this is going to be perfect. Go back to my truck. About 4 hours later, I go on the trail, because on my way back, she crossed the walking path that I went down. And I keep in mind, I'm not looking for blood, but I see she went by this path. So I'm just kind of, you know, seeing if I can see any kind of sign or anything. And all of a sudden, it's just a carpet of red. Just, I was like, Ray Charles can find this. This is awesome. I waited 4 hours, come back, and then that deer was still alive. I still don't know how. I called trackers in. They couldn't find her.
Serious? Wow.
I was like, this is the year from hell. So, and I called off.
Probably doesn't matter, but what broadhead are you shooting?
That was, all of them was with the day six. And honestly, dude, they're the sharpest broadheads I use. Like, absolutely no problem. Like, I don't, like in other animals, I haven't got passes with me getting them as sharp as what I can. And this was just so strange, because I have the bleeder blades, I have that. And I'm not saying anything bad about day six, because they're a phenomenal head, because even after I pulled all of them were in the ground, like when I found them. And they were buried in the ground, like halfway up the arrow minimum on one, and the other one was all the way to the fletching. And I pulled that thing out, cleaned it off real quick, and it still has an edge. So it wasn't a broadhead issue. It was a me and my shot placement issue, and that's clear.
So you think you got like a big, like a bleeding muscle hit then, or what? I mean,
that's the only thing I could think of, and I thought for sure I put it, you know, right behind the shoulder. And I was thinking, well, it's a little bit further back than I wanted, but I should be fine. And after talking with the tracker and stuff, and like after he came out, like, he couldn't find it. I went in on a 2.5 mile grid search the next day. I was like, after he came out, I was like, I gotta try. Wow. You know, even with the dog coming in, it's like, dude, he couldn't figure out what's going on. So it's like, this is weird, because we lost blood. We couldn't pick up the scent or anything. So maybe it was just bad tracker, not newer dog, or our some dogs get burnt out. I get it. But what it comes down to is I shouldn't have put myself in that situation. It was my fault. And, yeah, so that's my humbling story of 2022, this last year.
But it sounds like you didn't do anything wrong, though. I mean, it was on your offside kind of thing, but you said you kind of pivoted and shot, right? I mean,
yeah. I might have just hit her a little too high, a little bit higher than I thought I did. Maybe I hit the back of the liver, maybe at the front of it. I don't know. It's obviously I didn't hit along because at first I thought it was because when I seen blood, I see a little bit of frothiness with it. I was like, okay, well, that's got to be.
Well, maybe you got one lung or something.
Maybe I got one lung or whatever. And I'm talking to the tracker. He's like, yeah, that's a good chance that's liver. I was like, that sounds a little odd, but I'm not going to tell a guy who goes on deer tracks for, you know, hundreds of tracks a year or whatever it might be. I'm not going to sit there and talk down to his knowledge. I was like, all right, cool. I believe you. And he told me, he's like, man, sometimes they just go. I was like, all right. Well, it's just, like I said, it is what it is.
Sucks, man. That's pretty heartbreaking. Yeah.
It is. It not only that, but I'm picky about a lot of things. I don't like taking my gun out in the woods anymore as much as what I used to. And because I love bow hunting. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, just some years are like that. The following year wasn't much better. And that's another story. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. It just happens. Do you go small game at all or?
No, actually I was so busy in the workshop this year. Like I was busy all the way up until a week before Christmas roughly. And I took
my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, and that I only got to go out one time during gun season. I took my firearm with me and that was November 19th. That was the last time it was. I usually hunt minimum every weekend and a couple times during the week throughout the entire year. Beginning of bow season all the way through January 1st for the most part. Like I am out there, like the last day of season, if I still have a tag to fill, I'm in the woods. And I was so busy that I just got burned out. Like any free time I had to spend it in the shop last year. So
this is an awesome transition here.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say it's an awesome transition here because we're like 45 minutes into this and we haven't even talked about Broken Compass knives.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Right? We haven't even touched on that. I'm sure people listening know, you know, what you do and stuff, but I mean, you're like a custom knife maker. You started, is it, are you full-time doing this now or is this still your side thing?
Oh, it's still a side thing right now. I'm still working full-time for another company and I'm doing this on the side. Yeah. It's not too bad.
It's just like blown up, right? I mean, the last time you and I talked, you were not this busy. Right.
No.
And you weren't cranking out this many knives and having this many orders and having to shut down orders because, you know, you don't want the wait times out, you know, crazy, stupid, you know, amount of time or whatever. So,
right.
Let's touch on that real quick. I mean, you got into making knives. You were grinding them. I know you weren't forging them. I don't know if you're forging them now, but grinding them and then. Just 100% social media, people started buying them, and now you've got all these other offerings. So let's touch on them.
All right. Well, like you said, it was started off as a hobby, then kind of progressed into what it is right now. Last year, I went, you know, like 100%. Like I was already claiming the money on my taxes, but now I'm a LLC, and gosh. Honestly, if if I took every order I had right now, I could almost go full time. Almost like it was, but it would, but the thing is with knives, that's especially awesome. especially in the market that I'm in, it comes and goes, you know what I mean? Like anything, like you have some guys at the beginning of the year who are smart and put in their orders and they're like, yeah, I'll have it way before hunting season. Like, and I should be good to go. Then you have guys that call like a week before they go on their elk trip and they want a knife for that. And I was like, and so what is it? October last year, I had to stop taking orders because I just didn't have the time. Like I had so many orders backed up and I had to start putting them into February last year or this year. And I didn't know when in February I was going to be starting. Because you know how it is in the holiday, you know, from Thanksgiving until after Christmas, usually you're pretty booked up, especially with a small child and family gatherings and so on, et cetera. So, you know, your time is always limited. Well, like I said, I was still building, sending out knives up until a week before Christmas. And I still had a pretty good sized list in February, but I had to stop taking them in February because I didn't know when I was going to be able to start back up because my son's birthday is in January 25th. So that works out. So the kid gets like two Christmases or something, you know what I mean? Just has to wait a little bit, but it just works out that way. But for the most part, I've actually stopped taking custom orders, and it's not that I don't want to. It's because it's starting to become a little bit of an issue with some things. Like I put people on the list. I have a good idea of, you know, of handle materials that they want, and I can kind of roughly get them into a price range. Well, when the price of materials goes up, like spontaneously, you know what I mean? If you notice it at the grocery store or the gas pump, you know, you start notice things start going up here and there. Well, same thing happens across the board. So what I'm going to start to do is just doing like small, like knife drops. I'm hoping to start off with like between five and 10, but five at the minimum, and just do a bunch of random ones or I'll do a whole batch of hikers, my hiker model, skeleton knives, or with handles. Same thing with the Minutemen, which Jason Samkoviak ordered, and that's the thing that really shot up all my orders last year. Jason really promoted it, and I love the guy to death, but he's making me lose a lot of sleep. So,
that's the one I want,
and that's fine. And people love it, and I get it. It's exactly what they want, and I'll make it. You know, I might make a couple little tweaks here and there, but it won't differ too much. I'm going to try and still offer it at the same thickness. But the problem is once you get to a thin steel and something you have to oil quench, you can run into warpage. So it's a little bit of give and take. So, but yeah, with that knife coming out, a lot of people wanted it, and I'm glad to offer it. So I'm gonna try and do a handful of those with a couple other models just to kind of put up a wide variety of what I get custom orders for on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's cool. I think I messaged you a while back saying, hey, this Minuteman one.
Oh, yeah.
At with it. You're like, man, I'm not even taking orders. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, when you do, I want to get on the list.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's and I get it. And I appreciate it for one. I always appreciate it. And I feel bad. Like I do, like telling people I'm not even taking custom orders anymore. It's because it got to a point, not only that, but trying to track people down after a couple months. You know, they don't use social media that much. So, and they don't leave me a phone number. Like I have one customer, like it looks like he got booted off of Facebook or he deleted his account. And that was the only place one way or another. So that opened up a knife build for another guy that was patiently waiting. And I'm up, like, right now, all I got to do is, like, with four of them, to sharpen them and send them out the door. And another two just need a couple little things done to it. And I'll be good. Then I'm on to, like, four more custom orders. And I think after that, I should be caught up. But it's to the point I want to post the knives that I'm making and, you know, putting out there. But at the same time, it's like, gosh, it's like with my new work schedule and like a lot of family issues going, I won't say issues, but a lot of things going on with the family. It's like my time in my shop is getting like diminished quite rapidly. So I don't want to tell somebody, yeah, it's going to be about 2 months and it ends up being six, you know? And
I gotcha. So it's just quicker to just do those knife drops and then, yeah.
And just start working on the next
batch. And then just make another batch down the road kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Right.
So where are you at right now then? Are you open or not open for taking orders?
Currently not open for taking orders. What I am telling everybody right now is like once I'm caught up with all my customs, which I was hoping to be caught up and good to go right now, but I have, gosh, man, I have four more still to build that I have cut out that I have to pop holes in, heat treat, grind the bevels, and, you know, then get a hold of the customers for handle materials. So, and I keep on throwing builds on top of it. Like I took a trade on that Satori. Then I try and donate a knife every time the MTB, Michigan Traditional Bow Hunters, like a Jamboree, or this year they put on the Compton Big Game Classic. And I donated a knife build. So, because I always try and help them out. That is a great organization. They do so much for us. It's a bunch of great people running it. And I just, you know, if I can, I can't always donate my time, but what I can donate is something like, like a knife to help bring up their funds a little bit to help them out with the next Jamboree or whatever activity they want to partake in. So if it helps out, I'm more than welcome to do it. So, yeah. So I do those little builds here.
So what are the models you have right now?
Oh, gosh. All right. So the latest one is the Minuteman. It's 1/8 inch thick. It's right at a 3 inch blade. Overall, I think it's about 6.5 inches long, give or take. But it's a nice little EDC, everyday carry, something you could hide in your pocket. Or if, like a lot of people actually want like a little belt loop for them. So I'll just put a little strap of leather on it and, you know, so they can just put it on there. It's super light. It's meant to be a super thin profile. It's not intended to be like a super thick, heavy handle on it. And then after that, the next more popular knife that I have is a Hiker. And it is ideally supposed to be like a pocket skinner for the most part. And it has a nice belly on it, so it'll do a lot of work for such a small blade. I wanted a nice cutting area or a long cut on a short knife, and that's how you accomplish that with a wider blade with a little bit of a belly on it. So it's not meant for fine work. It's not gonna it'll gut your animal, but it's not gonna do the fine end and on the butt. You know what I mean? You're not gonna cut out the poop shoot on it for the most part. So, you know, but it'll do just about everything you want. Then after that, you have my next one is going to be my Pursuit model, which I make out of A2 tool steel. So it's an air hardened steel. And this stuff is tough as nails. I love it. If I had a cryo tank to quench it in, I'd be able to get like 1 to 2 more Rockwell hardness out of it. But when you're already dabbling at right around 60 to 61 Rockwell hardness, it becomes a point where it's harder for a person to sharpen at times. So it's something that you can sharpen the field with a little bit of work. It's not as easy as 1095 or 01 tool steel, but it'll generally hold an edge a lot longer. And it's a much thinner profile for your, it's almost like a bird and trout knife for the most part.
Okay. And, is it more brittle though when you make it that high Rockwell?
Nope. Generally, no. It's not going to really hinder it because that's what that steel, when hardened properly, is meant to be at. So it's like Ironwell broadheads, right? And like last time I checked, I think they're offered an A2 tool steel, and really? they go through a heat treat process that is like way more than what I do, and that's why their Rockwell is always a lot harder than mine. So that's because they have a cryo. I was looking up how they are looking into how they heat treated theirs because I was just curious. And they're serious. They're serious about their product. And
he's that dude is like an engineer too, right? What's his name? Bill Vander.
Yeah.
Vander Hayden, something like that. So I've heard him on a bunch of stuff. I mean, he's about as like geeked out like on the metallurgy and but the science behind everything is like as anybody I've ever heard about being geeked about anything. So I'm not surprised to hear that from you.
Oh, and you know, I love that kind of stuff. You know, people are very passionate. Like I'm a knife maker, actually two knife maker buddies of mine. They're both trad guys, and one's Simbita Knives out of Ohio, and the other one's Organic Blades, Organic Knife Works, something like that. I think he's out of Arizona, if I'm correct, or New Mexico, one of the two. If he listens to this, sorry if I messed it up, but like he's not just like all of them are geeky about their steels, and not only that, but their artistry. Like Morganic is more artistry, and the fact that like he does little designs here and there, it's like super clean and. But he's geeky about it. He's always trying to improve upon like every little thing. And the same thing with my buddy Evan down at Simbita Knives. Like that guy is so passionate about the product that he's offering that like it just when I talk to him, I instantly get inspired upon it. So when you hear a guy talk about like his broadheads that he's doing, and then he's talking about the metallurgy, you know, all the different metals he went through, and then, you know, just to find the right one, he's putting the proper edge on it, the proper heat treatment. Like that's a product you want to stand behind. Like anybody who could talk to you, not just like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, it's just a knife or it's just a broadhead. So, but anyway, sorry, side tangent.
No.
But that's my pursuit model for the most part. It's a thinner profile. It'll do a lot of fine work. It's just what you generally see, you know, when you go to a store and you pick up a fixed blade buck knife or something. It's, you know, it's just a good blade all the way around for me. Like I use one, I love it. And then the next one be like a Timberhawk, a Timber Ghost. I like that because that's what you see in more of a traditional custom knife. So it's a little bit wider. It's about a 4-inch blade, but it has a nice handle on it, and you can do an assortment of not just handle materials, but the handle's a little bit wider, so when you do something custom on it, you can really see like the custom work that goes into the handle as much as the blade. So
then you just because there's more like real estate to work with, or
generally, yeah.
Okay.
Like if I do. Like splices and the handle, so I can like a little pop of color here and there. It's you can really start to see it. You can see it pretty good in the Pursuit model, but more so because if I'm using a beautiful piece of ironwood burl, and I love using ironwood burl because you can really get a lot of vibrant colors out of it, and it just shimmers just perfect. But in certain knives you can only use a small section, so I'm sitting there for like 10 minutes like trying to, you know, smooth it out, buff out the handle material just to find out what's really going to give me the best figure in the small section that's going to be most prevalent when I present it to my customer. And
right,
not only that, but if I'm generally, if I'm happy with it, 99.99% of the time, the customer is going to be happy with it. And I'm pretty anal retentive when it comes to the aesthetics of it. And when I have a little bit wider handle, I can narrow it up in certain areas so it still fits comfortably in your hand, just a little bit wider profile. So I don't have to make the handle as thick. And it tends to be a little bit more comfortable in your hand for longer uses. At least to me, that's that. Again, that's a personal preference, not let's say that's the end all be all. But so I have that. I have, what else? My Hunter model. I started, my Hunter model is just a nice drop point, good all day use, utilitarian for hunting, for EDC carry, to bushcrafting, whatever you want. And I generally try and keep the steel right around 5/32nds. And I try and give it a full flat grind just to give it the sliciness you need, but it has enough hefty backbone. So in case you need a baton, you know, through kindling or wood or whatever it might be. So,
your grinds, are they flat grind like you said, or do you do any kind of like concave or anything like that with any of them?
I don't do hollow grinds. I've done a couple, and it took, let's just say, to get one good one for me practicing and learning how to do it, I had to do 4 knives that I ended up just throwing out just because the edge got too thin. Yeah. So it's still a learning curve for me, and I know some guys just do it like it's second nature. I get it. Me, it was a chore, but I'm still trying to offer that. But as of right now, no. I'm doing convex for bushcrafters. If they want that, it's generally not that bad. But I'm trying to get better into doing Scandi grinds. So if you see, I'm going to butcher the name, but it's called a Puco. Okay, cool. So you'll generally see a lot of, they call that a Scandi grind. So it's only like maybe a half inch of the total blade is actually ground, the rest of it's just a nice flat surface. And I'm trying to get better at that. I can pull it off 90% of the time, but sometimes it's just turns into a full flat grind. So,
I mean, I like just the regular flat grind, right? I mean, I don't like all the other, you know, convex, concave, or, you know, hollow ground, whatever. Because eventually, I mean, I don't care, no offense, I don't care who you are, who you are as a knife maker or whatever, that eventually someone's going to have to sharpen that edge, right? It's probably going to be the end user. And I mean, the end user doesn't have access to either the tooling or the techniques to be able to do that kind of stuff. And I just like a nice flat edge. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's probably worked since, you know, the first caveman saw his first piece of sharp rock and cut himself with it going, right. You know, this works. I just,
No, I get it. Absolutely. And I try and set the bevel as best as what I can, but I freehand sharpen. So I sharpen till I get the edge the way I want. And generally, when I'm sharpening, I'm not using stones. I'm using a belt, and I'm trying to put a little bit of a convex edge on that sharpening, on that sharp edge. And generally, what that does is it's just like an axe head. You know, when it's rounded just a little bit, this is just from me noticing it. I don't have to sharpen it as much because with the convex, it just lasts just a little bit longer. And that's what I'm trying to do. Right. It's just trying to get you an edge and you can do it. So I've had customers call me like, man, I can't get this thing sharp. I was like, well, what's your angle? I was like, well, and I tell them what I told you is like, I'm putting this rounded edge on there and you're trying to put a flat edge on there. So you have to reset that bevel.
Yeah.
So, and I don't, it's sometimes cumbersome a little bit, but like most people get it and understand, but if you start like with a 220 stone or a 120 stone and you go, I mean, you don't have to take it up to 1,000 to get a mirror finish. A lot of people do something, yeah. But you don't have to. You could take it to a 220 and strop it and be just fine with it. Every time you can take it to like 200s, 300s, whatever you want, and you'll be just fine. It's, everybody thinks you need a mirror polish. It's like, no, you don't need a mirror polish for that thing to work, because there are guys that use double-edged bastard file to sharpen their blades, and then they'll use a ceramic.
Yeah, I mean, it looks nice, but
yeah, it just depends on how much time you want to put on it. So
sure.
Yeah. It works out. It just works out that way. It's like everybody's going to be a little bit different too. And everybody's, let's just say they're using like a, something with a set bevel. Like you can get the Worksharp, the Lansky's, you know, and I've seen a buddy of mine, he was using the, what's the broadhead sharpener, the that you can get through Three Rivers. It's KMG,
like a KME or something, or
KME, whatever. Yeah, like
yep.
Buddy of mine, he uses that. He just gets a nice wide stone, fixes it in there, gets his angle right, and he sharpens my blade with that, and it works just fine for him. So
I bought this. What is it? The hell is it? Not Knife Works. What is it?
Worksharp.
Worksharp, thank you. Yeah, Worksharp. Yep. It's a Worksharp one, and it's the, you know, it kind of looks like some of the other other systems. You know, you got like this stone on a rod, and you got like a little clamp and a holder and all that stuff. And man, I tell you, I mean, it works.
Oh yeah,
really, you know, it works really, really good. You know, I do that for my knives, but you know, for broadheads, I love, like you said, I love doing it just with a bastard file. It's something that I, you know, enjoy doing, you know, and I can get shaving sharp, and it just takes a long time. But yeah, with knives, I don't have that kind of effort. I don't know why. I just don't do that with knives. But you know, all of them have to be shaving sharp. You know, I will say though, just kind of backing up a little bit, you're kind of going through all these all your models and all the stuff that you're talking about with what you're doing with the handles and the accents and this, that, and the other. Since the last time, like, you and I talked, when you were kind of first relatively newish, let's say on Instagram, right? Because that's where I see all your stuff. And following you since then, I mean, the level of like craftsmanship and just the what's the word? I'm gonna this is a terrible word for like a rough and tumble like knife guy. I'm gonna say pizzazz. Okay, but I mean that in like the most like burly awesome kind of way. But it's
man, you're slapping lipstick on that pig.
I know. Yeah. Forget the lipstick. We'll call it, lip balm maybe. But just looking at some of your stuff, I'm like, wow, like he's really developed his craft, like as far as like what the finished product actually looks like and some elaborate, you know, finishes and craftsmanship. So I mean kudos to that. I mean, it's
thank you.
It shows. Yeah.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it a lot. I really do. Nine words like that, pizzazz, a little bit of flair.
I wouldn't use that in your marketing. Let's put it that way. I would probably hit the thesaurus. I can't even say it. Thesaurus and come up with like a better name. But there you go.
Well, that's okay. When I do a website, you'll just have a comment on there like, he has the pizzazz that you're looking for.
Between now and then, I'll come up with a better word, I promise.
That's okay. And all of a sudden, it's just going to pop in your head, like big conversation.
Yeah,
I meant to say this.
I know. Yeah. Flair. No, flair does. That's even worse. Never mind. Forget it. I forget I said anything. So,
no, it's but, fine. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, no. Okay. So, if people want to look at your stuff, right? We're like an hour and 15 here, and we just made some calzones tonight, and I put them in like a little bit ago. Ooh. So they're gonna be done soon. So this will be handed the dough and all that stuff. Today was like a daddy daughter day because mommy's at Disney, right? So she's gone for the weekend. So we're cooking stuff we want to cook. So I put them in the oven about 15 minutes, 5-10 minutes ago. So so we could probably start like kind of wrapping this up. Otherwise, we're going to be here for hours because I can talk about the shit for hours. But
oh, that's cool.
So let's see. People want to follow you. People want to find your stuff. Whether they can or can't. Actually, we can talk through that. Where do they find your stuff? And then if they're interested in your stuff, like what's the next step they should do?
Well,
currently,
if they want to see what I'm doing currently, the best spot is really Instagram. And I know like some folks don't like it or whatever, but I'm not busy enough right now for a website, you know? So what I'll say is the best spot is Instagram. You can just look me up at Broken Compass Knives, and that's just what it is. You'll see my emblem, then you'll scroll down, and my name is Travis Styles. You'll see that in the caption below. But that's the best spot to find me. You can message me through there. If you're on Facebook, just look me up as Travis Styles. Styles is spelled STILES. And I think I still have my company emblem on there as my profile picture. So it just looks like a compass for the most part. And yeah, you can friend request me. You can message me if you want to get a hold of me. You can go through my email. My email is even easier. It's brokencompassknives@yahoo.com. And you know, if you want me to send a couple pictures to you here and there, that's cool. But like I said, I'm going to be going to more of a knife drop. Those are going to be, unfortunately, more exclusive through Facebook and Instagram. And it's like I'm really hoping to get on those. Like once I get these other orders done, I'm hoping within a month get these other custom orders done. And I'll be doing knife drops there. Then I'm out. So I'll just come up with like five knives I want to put out there. I'll handle them up nice and sweet, get them all ready to go. So as soon as you say, I want that, it's yours. We'll send the money through PayPal and it'll generally be in the mail within the next couple of days. And that's what I really want to go towards. So that's
so it's kind of moving away a little bit from like full on customs, like individual, but more like kind of like a batch of knives that you're going to put, you know, your kind of ideas and whatever into and just kind of just sell them in batches. Right. Cause I'm sure it's a whole lot easier for you to crank out a bunch of like similar knives than it is to do, I don't know, one of this, one of that, one of this, one of that. Right.
Generally. Yeah. Especially when I have to switch up my steels because that's a different heat treat process. Like one might only take, let's just say, 4 hours to do, like a total heat treat process. Another one might take 8 hours to do, it really depends the cool down, the heat up in the oven. Then you have to, you know, do your tempering cycles, and you know that just takes time. There's just no way around it. You know, I want it to be precise and accurate. So I generally, like when I work with 1095 or 01 tool steel, I do them all at once. And I have more orders for this. So now my next batch I'm getting ready to do is all A2 tool steel. And I might have an AEBL, a stainless steel, to do, which is a totally different heat treat process in itself. So I try to offer a stainless steel that's inexpensive, so the cost won't go up, but AEBL is like a really good steel that's not expensive, and especially for a guy who doesn't want to take care of like who's lazy about taking care of a knife. I'm being serious. And it's like not everybody is like going to think, oh, it was raining and, you know, I have moisture on my knife. So, you know, I'm going to take it out, oil it, clean it, make sure it's good. Cause it's like with all these high carbon steels, you got to do that. If you want it to last and want it to look the way it does, or for the rest of your life, you have to take it out. You have to soak it in oil, something. So
right.
It's like, think of it like cast iron skillet. You know, it's like you can go and wash it, you know, scrub it, get it nice and clean, but if you don't coat it with oil when you're done, it's going to be rusted by the end of the day. So,
right.
You just got to do what you got to do to maintain it. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, all right, my man. I think my calzones are looking pretty golden brown over here. So,
perfect. Perfect, I mean, man. We'll enjoy it.
It's probably a good time to sign off. I'm glad we caught up. It's tough, dude, with, you know, work and dad life and all that stuff. It's just, you know, we don't get to, I live vicariously through, like, cause I mean, you're on other podcasts, right? Of course. And I listen to all those other ones and it's, I kind of feel like, you know, I follow what, whether it's you or somebody else or whoever, you know what I mean? But it's like, man, I still want to like talk to you one-on-one kind of thing, just because it's like, I don't know. It's a different vibe. So I'm glad we can, glad we could do this.
Well, yeah. Maybe get down to, are you a member of PBS?
Or, so you just reminded me, I'm not a member of Compton. I was a member of PBS and I realized that, my membership has run out because I do like the yearly thing. And I think it just recently ran out. And the only reason I remember that is because I re-upped with Traditional Bowhunter Magazine. And it got me thinking, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. What else? Because they kind of come due at the same time for some reason for me. So I got to do that.
Right. Well, here's what I'm going to say is re-up on all of them because they're great organizations. And, you know, obviously your locals. But Compton's just starting to offer like youth hunts and stuff like that, you know, which is great, which I think is great. You know, with PBS, you know, you see a lot more, you know, deer hunts, elk, bear, javelina, whatever it may be, pig hunts. But sign up for the PBS and meet me down in Kentucky for the Land Between the Lakes.
LBL hunt.
Oh, you'll have a fun. You'll have such a fun time, man. It's just sitting around at the end of the night. You meet a lot of different guys from all over the country. And
when is that?
That is the last weekend of September through the first weekend of October this year.
And it's is it deer, hogs, or what is that?
Whitetail. Mm-hmm. And all together, you're going to spend about $300, $350 or whatever for your hunting license and your deer permits. And on the LBL, you can take a buck and a doe. But the thing is, it's the learning a new spot. It's, you know, talking to a couple guys who've been doing it here and there, piecing together, you know, because they have crop fields on there. So you're finding out the rotations. You're looking to where there's a fresh food source that they want to hit. You're getting mad because your first thing you're looking for is white oak acorns and stuff like that. But sure enough, there are acorns all over the place. And you're learning how to hunt hill country, even though you've never hunted hill country before. And I had such a good time.
That sounds awesome.
As soon as they offered it up again, I was like, put me down. I'm down. I want to do it again.
And then you come back to a new dog. What's not to like?
No doubt, right? It's like, hey, I told my wife ahead of time. I was like, all right, cool. This is what's going to happen when I leave. Your mom's coming to stay here for a week, and you can watch each other, okay? And then help out with Dalton, my son. And on top of it, you're banned from going to anywhere that offers like a pet. Yeah, you're not going to PetSmart. Right. I don't want to see a goldfish. I don't want to see a parakeet.
I was
going to
say goldfish, nothing. But, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome. So it was such a good time last year. But do one of those. Come on down, visit, hang out. PBS and Compton are great organizations. And I hope to see you at one of them. At the very least, I hope to see you at ETAR this year.
I'm 90% making that happen. So, yeah.
Well, same here.
All right, my man. All right, man. Appreciate you being on. Everybody, go follow Travis. Like, awesome. Like I said, awesome knives, awesome craftsmanship. So, I'm glad you came on. So, if you like this episode, definitely like, share, and subscribe. And I'll see you guys next time. Thanks.